Hey everybody, it's me, your buddy Dave, Dave Splash, the host here on the Dark Stuff Podcast. Thanks for tuning in to the show. This is episode 104. For those of you who are just checking in for the very first time at 104, this is part two of the previous podcast. So I'm not going to say like stop what you're doing and listen to a different one, but I'm just saying you kind of missed the first part. Anyhow, moving on. This is part two of the last episode, the interview with Josh Hayden from Spain. Josh, of course, tells the story of the ending of the band going solo, and of course now with the band being back together. So you've got all of that to look forward to in this action-packed show. I want to do a little bit of technical jargon, housekeeping, if you will, for the show. I want to say, first of all, that I set up a Facebook page for the show. It's facebook.com/thedarkstuffpodcast. If you want to find me on Twitter, I'm at Dave Splash. That's all one word. That's Twitter. I don't care what way you listen to it, just as long as you do. I just want ears hearing this stuff and getting feedback and whatnot. But if you would say, hey, Dave, you know, what's your preference? How would you like me to listen to the show? I would say two things. I would say iTunes is the number one, because iTunes is the most significant force in digital music or whatever, and that's where podcasts are basically measured. So I kind of prefer iTunes. However, I personally like Stitcher a whole lot. I use Stitcher. I know friends that do. So I'd be okay with you using it through Stitcher too. I mean, they're great also. Spreaker, I'm new to. I've just signed up, but I've heard good things. YouTube, I put it on YouTube because I saw other podcasts were doing that. And really, if you watch the episodes on YouTube, it's the exact same episode from an audio perspective. I just put up pictures of like the album artwork from the band or artist or whatever that's on the show, and pictures of them and stuff like that. It's really simple, you know. It's nothing special. Don't go out of your way to watch them on YouTube. I'd far prefer iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, etc., those kinds of things. Okay, one little bit of additional information before I get into the interview with Josh is that since the episode came out last week, Josh contacted me through Twitter. By the way, his Twitter is at Josh Hayden. That's H-A-D-E-N for Hayden. And also the band's official Twitter is at Spain the Band. And the Blue Moods of Spain, I'm sorry, was your homework from last week's episode. You were supposed to have purchased it in some capacity. I found out for you, in case you didn't do the research, it is on iTunes. So if you're listening to this through iTunes, hey, you only have to, you know, move your mouse just a little bit to go over there and do it. That's all. That's all I got for you on this one. Well, let's get to the episode. This is episode 104, the second part of my interview with Josh Hayden from Spain.
Hey, this is Eddie Spaghetti from the greatest rock and roll band in the world, the Super Suckers.
Hey, this is Joe from the Mises.
This is Adam Franklin from Swerve Driver.
This is Artie Lang from the Howard Stern Show.
Hey, this is John from the Fag.
Hey, this is Rick Kubik, drummer from Matarone.
This is Josh Hayden from Spain.
Matt Sharp from The Rentals, and you are listening to...
And you're listening to the Dark Stuff Podcast.
And you're listening to the Dark Stuff Podcast.
The Dark Stuff Podcast.
She Haunts My Dreams was released in 1999. What was going on during that time period, the 3 years between those two things?
Not to cast any aspersions, at the time I did what I thought I needed to do. I thought I was making the right decisions business-wise. You know, back then, recording contracts aren't the same as they are now. And plus, I was really young, and I didn't know what I was doing. I signed contracts that I was advised not by my lawyer at the time not to. other contracts I signed that seemed like it was a good idea, and I took, you know, advice. I accepted certain things and I rejected other things. But, you know, basically I became, trapped in, a kind of contractual dispute between two record labels. And I was unable to record any music for about 2.5 years.
Wow.
Until the dispute was cleared up and I got the green light to record. And looking back at it, I probably would have done things differently. But, you know, what's the point of looking back at it? It's, you know, it is what it is.
So and, were the songs that came out on the album written years before and you just kind of held them in your pocket until you were able to record, or was stuff brand new when you went into the studio to, and maybe you scrapped a couple of tunes from that time where you couldn't record?
It was kind of a combination of both. There were some songs on She Haunts My Dreams that I had written, for example, like during our 96 tour, and it just held on to them. And there were some songs I had written, you know, in the interim couple of years. And then there are also some songs that were brand new. But I remember, like, the song Our Love Is Gonna Live Forever, I wrote in a hotel room in Germany when we were on tour in 96. And then there were other songs that, like, I can't remember right now, but there's a couple songs that I wrote, right before we went in the studio. And then there was, like, the song Easy Lover, which I had the melody for back in 95, and I didn't complete it until I was actually in Sweden in the studio, like the day before we were supposed to start recording.
So you recorded the album in Sweden?
Yeah.
Who was the producer on that record?
The producer was a guy named Johan Kugelberg, who was a friend I had met, you know, through, you know, the crazy world of record labels. And we had other options of recording, and none of them really were working out. And Johan suggested that, you know, he's from Sweden, and he knew of a great studio on a island in the Swedish archipelago, which was, you know, beautiful and serene, and we could. It had a living quarters, and we could just go there and chill out and record a great record, you know, not be rushed or anything like that. And that's what we ended up doing. And it actually, I was there for about 2 months.
Was it the same, all the same people on both records?
Except for the drummer, yes.
Okay. And what was the situation there, that he just left the band, or?
It just didn't work out.
Okay.
Just one of those things.
No real story there?
nothing really to speak of. You know, it just didn't work out. Even though Evan was the original drummer, and a lot of people say that, you know, he was the reason why Blue Moods worked so well, and I agree. He's a great drummer, but it just didn't work out. And actually, the drummer on She Haunts My Dreams is Anna Warnaker's brother, Anna from That Dog. Her older brother, Joey, who I had gone to high school with, And he had been asking me, you know, at the time, when could we work on a project together? And I said, well, as a matter of fact, we've got to, you know, record the second Spain record and we don't have a drummer. And he said, oh, okay, I'll drum for you guys. So Joey recorded drums on that record, but he never toured with us.
So he just played, he was just for the studio, but he wasn't really a member of the band.
Right.
Okay. Now, did you also tour in support of the She Haunts My Dreams album?
Yes. We did even more touring for that than we did for Blue Moods.
And what was the reception like to the second album? Because it took a long time to come out, obviously, because of
it really did. Yeah. It certainly did. It took a long time, but it was like we had never been away, in Europe at least. When we came back to Europe to do the tour for the second record, the audience was bigger than it had been in 96. So we were playing bigger venues and, you know, we had a really great response. In the U.S., it was different.
Yeah.
But that's the way it is. Yeah. And any band will tell you that.
So the bulk of the audience has become European at this point. How do you think your second record holds up in comparison to, say, the first, and what do you feel about it now?
I think it has a different sound, but it has a different sound than the first record, but I still think it holds up.
Okay.
It you know, that record, we're kind of branching out, speeding up some of the tempos. We use different instrumentation, different kinds of instruments that weren't present on the first record. There was a lot more strings going on. A lot of that had to do with a pianist, arranger, composer named Esbjorn Svensson, who added a lot to, you know, kind of painted and made, you know, musical drawings around my, you know, original bass, drums, guitar, vocals, kind of conception of how the record should sound.
Okay. Now, it was less than 2 years between the second record and then the third record, I believe. So obviously contractual stuff was worked out. That was a more reasonable time difference in between albums.
Yeah.
What can you tell me about the I Believe album, the making of it, etc.?
One thing that's kind of different from the other records is that I decided I wanted to be the producer for the third record, which I think was a big mistake. Other people tell me they like the mixes on I Believe. I really didn't know what I was doing, and I drove the engineer crazy because, you know, I didn't know, and I still don't know, like, where, you know, levels are supposed to be in the mix. The songs were, I think, possibly more in a rock. Some of the songs were more in a rock vein than on the previous two records. But that's what I wanted to do. And, you know, some people tell me that I Believe is their favorite Spain record.
So, how do you think it, I mean, I guess what's your opinion of the album now, years later? You said it was a mistake to have you as producer, but
yeah.
Your feeling on the songs were still good, though.
I thought so. I still think so.
Sure.
We, Spain, as you know, we've now, I brought the band back at least in name, and I'm the only original member, but, you know, we're performing songs from all three records, and, you know, the songs from I Believe still stand up, in my opinion.
Now, did the same lineup, obviously you had another new drummer, but when you went to record I Believe, who played on that record?
That was myself and Merlo Podlewski, who was the original, one of the original Spain guitar players, and on keyboards and guitar was a guy named Sean Sullivan, who had actually toured with us for the She Haunts My Dreams tour. So we got to have a real good musical bond. And I think his playing is incredible on I Believe. And the drummer also is Will Hughes, who had also toured with us in 99. And that worked out really well.
Okay, so now what happened exactly? I think the impression with a lot of people was that after I Believe, the band broke up and ended. Was there any type of time where you felt like, well, it's over and I'm not going to do this anymore? Or had you always just sort of, this is just a hiatus or taking a break or what?
At the time, when I broke the band up, I had broken it up for good and I never wanted to bring it back, ever. I was so sick of it. I was not sick of playing. I was sick of the business part of it. And I was becoming resentful of the demands that were being placed on me that are actually demands that are quite normal. But again, at the time, I couldn't deal with it anymore. And we were supposed to leave on our European tour. Spain was supposed to leave on our European tour, and within 2 weeks, Sean quit and Merlo quit, and you know, justifiably so. But at that point, you know, with 2 weeks left to go on this big tour, I wasn't comfortable replacing them just to keep the label happy and the booking agents and the publicists and promoters who were justifiably disappointed when I canceled the tour and broke up the band, because I'm sure they had invested time and money in the tour. But I had to do what I had to do. And at the time, I was like thinking to myself, this is for good. I have to, you know, end this and move on. You know, there's a time for all, or that saying, all good things must end. That, you know,
sure.
That's how I felt. And
now then, did the record label then decide, okay, since the band is over, we're going to put out this best of record, the spirituals, the best of Spain, and then goodbye? I mean, was that sort of a contractual thing? Like they just kind of said,
actually, what happened was, I Believe was our last album that we owed Restless. So technically, we were done with that contract. And the only thing was, I think what happened was a couple of years or maybe a year and a half later, Restless called me and asked if I wanted to do a best of. And I said, yeah, sure, why not? So you
contributed a few, if I'm not mistaken, like demos or unreleased tracks.
Yeah. Yeah.
So giving a fan something at least to buy it.
Right.
Didn't have
I also,
those other records.
Yeah, exactly. And they also, were looking for somebody to write liner notes for it. And people were flaking out on them, and I just said, well, why don't I write the liner notes? And I think they were a little bit afraid that I would write something negative, but I didn't. I had only great times in that period, and you know, that's what I wrote about in the liner notes.
So when you ended the band and you had no intention of ever reforming as Spain. So
yeah.
What did you do musically following that? What have you been working on up until the point where you're now possibly reforming the band?
Well, kind of flashback to 96. Merlo was friends with a musician producer named DJ Shadow, and DJ Shadow wanted Merlo and myself, and Ken, I think, as well, to appear in a DJ Shadow video called Midnight in a Perfect World.
Okay.
And, or the video for that song from his record Introducing. And at that video shoot, there was a friend of DJ Shadow's named Dan the Automator, who is also friends with Merlo, and he was a big Spain fan. So at that shoot, Dan came up to me and told me that if in the future, if he had any work for me or, you know, anything that I could put vocals on, that he would let me know. And I think a couple of years later, he called me to sing on a song for a record he was doing called The Handsome Boy Modeling School.
Oh, sure. Totally familiar with that.
So that on their first record, I sang on a song called Sunshine with Sean Lennon. And then when he was getting ready to... Actually, okay, so now flash forward to, I think probably like 02 or 03, he hired me to sing on the Blue Man Group's record, it's their second record. The name escapes me right now, but
okay.
On the Blue Man Group's second record, which is very, you know, noteworthy, and rightly so, because it was the first time Blue Man Group had worked with vocals. So that was really exciting. They flew me out to New York to Blue Man Group's studio to lay down the vocal tracks. And when I was there, Dan knew that I had a contract with DreamWorks Records, which doesn't exist anymore, but at the time, I was under contract with DreamWorks, and Dan asked me, what are you doing for your DreamWorks record? And I told him I didn't know. I had no plans, really. I didn't have a band. I kind of was taking a break from writing, not so much songwriting, but maybe playing music.
Sure.
And Dan said, well, I want to produce your DreamWorks record, so let's make it happen. And so one day I went from not thinking about making music at all to the next, you know, I was writing new songs and preparing to go back in the studio. And that was for a solo record that I did called Devoted that I ended up releasing 3 years later on my own label, because DreamWorks wouldn't release it. Then they went under. They dropped me. I had to hire a lawyer to get Devoted back from them, because they didn't want to release it, but they didn't want to give it back to me also. And this happens to a lot of bands.
Oh, sure. Believe me, so many
yeah.
bands I've interviewed, they all have that same story. They,
yep.
hate, they hate the record. They won't put it out, but they
right.
won't cut the band loose and give them the record back.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then you got to go through all those motions. You got to get the lawyer, and it took about a year. And So finally I got it back, and Dan said he wanted to put the record out on his label, but that didn't work out. And eventually I just released it on my own label. But the whole time I was waiting for the record to come out, I was playing live, and I had a live band, and we played frequently in Los Angeles, but because we didn't have a record to promote, we didn't take it anywhere from there. And, it seemed like the fans wanted Spain. And it seemed like the right thing to do. I had not played bass and sang at the same time in a long time. I hadn't, played those old Spain songs in years. And I decided, I want to start playing them again. I think it would be nice. And I took the band that I had been working with for about 3 years for the solo record, minus the bass player, who is a great bass player named Dave Jones, who's a good friend of mine, because I started playing bass again. And that's the incarnation of Spain.
So you were playing under another name, and then you just decided to call it Spain?
Well, I was playing under my own name, Josh Hayden.
Oh, okay, just under your own
name. I'll send you a copy of the CD if you don't have it. It's called Devoted.
Okay.
It's called Devoted. I put it out on my own label. It's, I sell it through my website, and it's available through CD Baby. It's available on iTunes also.
Now, was the label initially unhappy with it because it didn't sound like Spain and that's what they wanted, or what was their complaint, I guess?
I couldn't figure it out. While we were recording it, they loved it. When I turned it in, they hated it. And there was no explanation of why they changed their mind. But about 3 months later, after we turned it in, I got the news story in the newspaper. DreamWorks is being sold to Universal, and they're dropping all their acts except for a few people who are being transferred to Universal. And sure enough, I got the letter, we're dropping you. So I don't know if it was because they didn't like the record as much as they knew they were, they knew that DreamWorks was closing down, and they just didn't want to tell me what was going on because it was a secret.
Huh. But you got the record. You got the record back eventually because of legal action and everything, and it came out.
Right.
So in conversations with you, or in the email from you, you said that you're in the demo stages now for a new Spain record. How far along are you on that, and when can people expect to hear some new music besides the one song that you're giving away right now as a free download?
That's a good question. I don't have a label. We are in the process of recording new songs, and we are playing some gigs. We have a gig, coming up at a European festival. It's called Tantin in Cadiz, Spain, in a couple of weeks. And when we come back from that gig, we're going to keep writing. We probably have maybe five new songs. One of them is a song called Miracle Man that I actually wrote. It was one of the first songs I wrote when I put Spain together back in 93. And we never played it. We kind of stopped playing it because it didn't fit into the lineup of songs that were on Blue Moods, or at least I didn't think it would. But I always remembered that song, and I brought it back. So we're actually playing, the new version of Spain is actually playing one of the first songs I ever wrote for Spain to play, which is kind of...
That's cool.
Cool, yeah. And And then there's other songs that are brand new. We recorded a 4-song demo. I have one of the songs is available as a free download from the Spain MySpace page. And the other 3 I actually haven't mixed yet. And I don't know exactly what to do with them yet, but.
Now, are you thinking that's maybe a route you would go, that to avoid the labels and just sort of put it out online? And, you know, that's becoming a trend in certain circles of bands just saying, well, fine, just, if you're going to take the album for free anyways, here, fine, download it for free. And we're just going to tour, and that's the way we're going to promote the band, I guess.
That's the future that I envision. I think that in the future, nobody is going to be buying or paying money for albums anymore. I don't know about right now, but that's how I think it's going to turn out.
And do you view that positively or negatively?
I view it positively. I'm not sure what we're going to do with the record because I don't have all of the songs written. It's songwriting for albums is a process. You know, sometimes I'll have a song that I think is really good, but over time with the band playing it, I decide it's actually not really that great after all. And then we stop playing it. And so it's like, it's a process, and I don't want to, make any hasty decisions. So until I have all the songs written, I can't really say what we're going to do about the next record. But I do envision a time in the near future where record labels won't be necessary anymore. And I think it's inevitable.
Yeah, it's getting closer and closer to that at this point.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, it's going to go back to grassroots support for music, which is a good thing. I think that it's going to bring more appreciation for music all around, and you can't ask for anything more than that.
Okay, well, there you go. That's the interview. It finally completes it, the long-lost saga of the interview with Josh Hayden. Whatever happened to that thing, now you know. And now you know the whole story up to that point. And like I said in the intro to the last episode, there is a story that comes after this show. I recorded this in 2008, and in 2012, Spain did finally release a brand new album of material called The Soul of Spain. That came out in 2012, and they have a 2014 album that just came out called Sergeant Place. I haven't heard that one. I've heard Soul of Spain. It's great. I haven't heard Sergeant Place yet, but I imagine, you know, when all the rest of the records are good, you know, why wouldn't this one be good, right? So anyways, I hope you enjoyed this episode. I want to tell you, coming up next, 105 is a really, really special episode. This will be my interview with Ace Frehley from Kiss. Of course, you know, he hasn't been in Kiss in about 10 years. I interviewed him about a couple years ago when he was out touring in support of his solo album, Anomaly. But I wasn't able to use the material at the time, and so this is completely an unaired interview that's, you know, never been broadcast anywhere under any capacity. After that, I've also got an interview with Annie Clark from St. Vincent. That's going to be a really, really great episode. I can't wait for you to hear that. I'm going to try and time that release-wise around the time that she goes on SNL, which is coming up, I want to say the 17th. But don't quote me on that. But she's the musical artist on Saturday Night Live. Okay, everybody. Well, thanks a lot for listening. I'll be with you shortly. This has been the Dark Stuff Podcast.
Transfer of data is complete.